Chapter 18. Bishop lay on the scanner bed in the opaque body stocking customary for situations requiring artificial persons to undress. APs didn't have the nudity taboo, but most humans preferred them to behave as if they did. Since his initial activation, Bishop had experienced all kinds of humans and had developed workarounds for a good many of their idiosyncrasies. All of his assignments had been with the Marines, whose catalog of quirks was unique to the military. For the most part, Bishop found them straightforward in a way that many civilians mistook for simple. Then again, a surprising number of humans misunderstood the whole concept of simple. They believed simple things could be complex, but complexity couldn't yield simple things. Bishop theorized it was because most humans lived in three dimensions, or four, if you counted time. He didn't. The hum of the donut-shaped scanner became louder as it glided up past his hips and over his torso. He couldn't see the life-sized output screen on the wall behind him, but he didn't have to. He was receiving the data directly via the strategically placed nanosensors under his skin. The UPP techs had missed those because he'd kept their intake functions fully encrypted. If they had examined him more carefully after attaching the new legs, they'd have discovered the nanos multiplying and spreading into the dermis below his waist. Then they would have dissected him completely, eager to understand how the nanos worked. They'd have learned plenty, enough to advance their fields of robotics and nanotech by several years, but not enough to put him back together, which would leave him as the inanimate object they claimed he was. The donut finished its latest pass upward and came back the other way now. It glided down his torso, moved over his thighs to his shins, where it stopped and moved back to his knees. "Look at that," the junior tech said. The microphone was off, but Bishop could pick up the vibrations on the booth walls and translate them into words. "Just look at those knees." "I know," the senior tech said, "but we're not set up to do that kind of extensive restoration." The microphone clicked on. "How about it, Bishop?" she asked. "Your knees? Feel okay?" Bishop rolled his head to the right and looked at her through the radiation-proof window in the booth. "So far," she thanked him and clicked off. "But that's polycarbon," the junior tech said. "I can't believe they used polycarbon for his goddamn knees. They won't hold up worth a damn." "Not much we can do except shore him up until he can have those cheap-ass substitutes replaced at Gateway." The senior tech chuckled a little. "I doubt he'll be doing anything too strenuous around here." The donut began to move again. Bishop resumed staring at the ceiling, then heard the microphone click on again. "We want to make a few more passes," the senior tech told him, "just to get as much detail as possible. That okay with you, Bishop?"
"I've cleared my calendar," he replied.
Both techs laughed, the junior one sounding slightly surprised that an artificial person could be funny. He must have been a new hire, Bishop thought, and remembered hearing Hudson say the best thing about newbies was that they hadn't already heard his one-liners. Rodina Station's biolab also had a scanner, an older model that was larger, worked more slowly, and made more noise. At the moment, it stood unused while Lara Braun and the two assistants she had chosen as much for their discretion as for their ability huddled around a stasis tube placed in a cradle on a workbench. The stasis tube was also older, not as compact as the latest model, so it used a lot more nutrient. But Braun had always preferred the larger size simply because it was easier to see the contents. A day earlier, the grayish, pink organism in the tube had borne some resemblance to a human embryo, but it had doubled in size overnight. Now it was slightly larger than Braun's thumb. She hadn't expected it to develop so quickly, and her apprehension was growing along with it. In another couple of days, she would know whether she had coaxed the alien material into viability or just pumped up a clutch of cells that would dead-end in a blob of goo. Braun was privately hoping for the latter. According to Hicks's FlexiMap, DP-54 Level 7 was a construction area, which meant it would not only be abandoned in the off-hours but unmonitored as well, making it the perfect place for a secret meeting. Hicks just hoped it wasn't full of people having affairs. Feeling the need for exercise, Hicks decided to jog to his meeting with Tully, Charles A. Of all various-sized passageways in the station, the ones nearest construction areas made the best running tracks. They were brightly lit, cooler than average, and had some give to the paving. He didn't see many other people. Apparently this wasn't jogging rush hour. And there was no reason for anybody to wonder about him. All the people on the space station were accounted for and identified. They might not know each other personally, but they weren't total strangers. Except for company spooks, Hicks thought. They didn't come any stranger than that. The last person he saw before he got to the construction site was another Marine, a young woman, almost as tall as he was, well-muscled, hair thickening in after a baldy cut. There were stripes on her bicep, one of them new and still red. Above it, on the curve of her shoulder, was a screaming neon blue devil brandishing a gold pitchfork. Hicks gave her a friendly wave, and she surprised him with a soft punch on the arm, as if they had served together. Maybe she'd been among the deck crew sent into the Sulaco. He almost turned around to run after her and ask what had happened. Maybe she'd tell him, but probably not. Her focused expression reminded him of Pharaoh, who obligingly popped into his head.
Hey, Hicks, sometimes a sock on the arm is just a sock on the arm. Maybe she was making sure you didn't hit her new stripe.
Ahead of him, he could see where the tunnel forked. According to the map, both routes would let out in the same place, about 50 meters apart. He just hoped the status update was current and neither had been sealed off for bad air. Or no air. There was air. But the map was wrong. The tunnel outlets were 20 meters apart and only one of them was open. Luckily, it was the one he'd taken. The other had a length of flimsy chicken wire glued across the opening at a haphazard slant. Somebody's last day on the job, Hicks thought. The construction site itself was gigantic, far wider than the map made it out to be. Two football stadiums could have fit side by side with just enough room for hot dog vendors to walk the perimeter. He couldn't estimate the length. The unpartitioned space ahead disappeared into shadows. The map was no help, saying only exact dimensions TBD. Hicks looked around, letting his eyes adjust to the darkness. The deeper shadows around him resolved into sections of metal plating for bulkheads, some of it in neat stacks, some seemingly scattered around at random. He moved a few more meters into the site, feeling slightly annoyed. How the hell was he supposed to find Tully Charles A., he thought. Yell, "Tully, Tully, oxen free!" Would the guy even know what that meant? Hicks! He turned around. A shadow next to a stack of metal plating was moving toward him. Not Tully, but the woman who had taken him and Newt to see Ripley. What was her name?
What are you doing here? He asked her. I'm supposed to meet a lab tech. Know where he is?
We work in the same lab, she said. He couldn't make it.
Spence, that was it. Hungover, is he? He said.
Scared, she told him, her tone serious. Loose lips, lose shares.
And that doesn't scare you?
I didn't sign anything, she said. Not yet, anyway. The only people who know what happened were there, on the Sulaco. They signed.
Okay, he said after a moment. So, for the second time, why are you here?
Tully and I are close.
Spence lifted her chin defensively, reminding him of Newt.
Nobody knows him better than I do. He's not Mr. Testosterone, but he doesn't scare easy. He told me what happened, what was on the ship, what he saw.
She paused, then added,
You know what it is, too, don't you?
Hicks took a breath, let it out.
I don't think anyone knows what it is.
Spence's expression said she knew an evasive answer when she heard it.
Fine, have it your way. Whatever it is, they've got the lab growing it in stasis tubes. We've been running recombinant DNA processes on some of the samples using human genetic material.
You're doing what?
You heard me, Spence said. They claim it's cancer research, all for the benefit of humanity.
Tully says that's pure bullshit, and he's right.
It would be like killing cancer cells with a shotgun. There are a couple of spooks from Millisci here.
Fox and Wells,
Hicks said, more to himself. Spence nodded.
From Weapons Division, no less, which isn't supposed to exist these days. Not officially, anyway. Not in these enlightened times of the Strategic Arms Reduction Treaty.
She gave a short, humorless laugh.
So why are you telling me all this? Hicks asked.
To be brutally honest, I'm not sure.
She shrugged, looking a bit embarrassed. Maybe just because someone else ought to know the weird shit that's happening? There's a rumor about someone coming in on a UPP shuttle, too. Someone who was supposedly with you on the Sulaco?
Bishop, Hicks said. The synthetic they sent with us to LV-426.
He paused, frowning.
You think the UPP are growing their own, cancer research?
Shit. We all better hope not, Spence said unhappily. Their techs, at least 5 years behind ours. They'd never be able to control it.
And the company spooks think we can?
Spence gave another single, mirthless laugh. Nobody asked me.